Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports. Let's kick off in Cameroon, where football fans are still basking in the glory of seeing their beloved national team, the Indomitable Lions, lift their fifth Africa Cup of Nations trophy earlier this month in Gabon. The trophy has been touring major cities in a government bid to bolster national unity. But that plan appears to be backfiring in English-speaking regions of Cameroon, where an anti-government strike is deepening. Reporter Moki Edwin Kinzeka has more details for us in this report he filed from Bafoussam, Cameroon.
Thousands of supporters cheered the national football team as the trophy they won this month on February 5 at the 2017 Africa Cup of Nations arrived in Bafoussam, Western Cameroon. President Paul Biya called people to come out massively as a demonstration of national unity, says Njitak Ngompepele, traditional ruler of Bafoussam.
Lorsqu'un véritable enfant va en guerre et revient avec...
He says when youth score a victory, it is but normal for the community to recognize that. He says the team merits blessings, protection and congratulations, and that is exactly what they are doing so as to encourage other youths to be hard-working and defend the interests of their country. But the trophy got a different reception as it arrived in Bamenda in the northwest, one of the English-speaking parts of the country. Hundreds of youth jeered and booed. Most people boycotted the event. Bamenda has been the epicenter of recent anti-government demonstrations kicked off 3 months ago when local lawyers and teachers in English-speaking regions went on strike. The government has responded by cutting the internet to the region and deploying troops. At the trophy reception, youth leader Grigory Achu says the government's response has made things worse.
It's not moving. Things are not moving. We want internet back. We want peace.
English-speaking professionals have refused to work in the northwest and the southwest to protest what they say is the overbearing use of French in schools and courts. Cameroon's constitution says the country is bilingual. While the government has made some reforms and promised others, it has refused to release dozens of people detained in relation to the unrest. Violence escalated as strikers demanded a return to federalism. Pressure groups calling for the English-speaking regions to secede also joined the movement. President Biya says the unity of Cameroon is non-negotiable. The strike has widened with people in English-speaking areas shutting their businesses on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays. Schools remain closed. Anne Fogui, an official of Cameroon's Ministry of Sports, says boycotting the reception of the trophy was bad form.
The victory was for all Cameroonians, and all Cameroonians would have been happy about it instead of boycotting it because it was not a political issue. So the people of Bamenda were supposed to be happy that they had a continental trophy after a very long time.
The Indomitable Lions surprised everyone when they lifted the trophy at this year's Africa Cup of Nations. The national football team went into competition as an underdog after several top players refused to compete, preferring to stay with their teams in Europe. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Bafoussam, Cameroon. VOA!
Keep on sunny side, always on sunny side. It'll help us every day, it'll brighten all our ways when
In Olympic news, the Hungarian government has announced it'll withdraw a bid by Budapest to host the 2024 Games, citing a lack of political and national unity behind the application. That means the 2024 Olympics will be awarded to either Paris or Los Angeles when the International Olympic Committee meets in September in Peru. The dropout by Budapest is being described as a further blow to the Olympic bid process. Three other cities, Boston, Hamburg, and Rome, withdrew their bids earlier. The IOC voted in a string of reforms 2 years ago in the hope of making the Games more affordable and attractive for potential host cities. Paris has hosted the Olympics twice before, in 1900 and 1924, and Los Angeles is also a double Olympic host in 1932 and 1984. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Music Time in Africa offers splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. From the classics of yesteryear to the hot tracks of the moment. I offer you what you need. Free ear therapy and mind massage. Join me, I'm Heather Maxwell, for Music Time in Africa, every Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 2000, and 2100 UTC.
Thanks, Heather. I'm looking forward to your next Music Time in Africa show. 2017 is a big anniversary year for The Voice of America. We're marking the 75th anniversary of our first broadcast. As I reflect on my nearly 30-year career at the VOA, one of my biggest sporting thrills was twice getting the chance to meet one of my boyhood heroes, former world heavyweight boxing champion Smokin' Joe Frazier, who died in 2011. At the age of 67, I met Smokin' Joe for the first time in 2004 when he visited our Voice of America headquarters here in Washington. And then in 2005, I visited Smokin' Joe at his boxing gym in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Smokin' Joe Frazier had a tremendous trilogy of fights with the late, great Muhammad Ali. Frazier beat Ali in their first bout on March 8, 1971, at Madison Square Garden in New York, where Smokin' Joe scored a 15-round unanimous decision victory. VOA's Adam Phillips looks back on that fight now in this report from New York.
Ali was ready to regain his world heavyweight title by fighting Joe Frazier. Smokin' Joe had earned the heavyweight title in elimination bouts after Ali's belt was stripped from him. The Ali-Frazier fight was touted as the fight of the century. It would determine which of those two undefeated champs could claim the belt. True to form, Ali played to reporters by taunting and insulting Frazier. Here's one example among many.
Joe Frazier is so ugly, his face should be donated to the Bureau of Wildlife.
Many thought Ali was angry at Joe Frazier, but that wasn't true in the opinion of Madison Square Garden photographer George Kolinsky. Kolinsky was a trusted friend who snapped photos of the fighter in public and behind the scenes for nearly 50 years. Many of those pictures are now on exhibit at the New York Historical Society.
When he talked about Joe Frazier, what he was really doing is being the showman, the performer, the entertainer, to promote the fight. He said, if I sold tickets, then I did my work.
Prior to the fight, Kolinsky shot several roles of Ali and Frazier in Frazier's Philadelphia gym. In a first, Kalinske asked them to put their heads together and to lock eyes in an attitude of barely contained fury. Then came the sparring.
And Joe hits Ali so hard in the stomach that Ali actually went down, and I couldn't believe this, that here I have my own fight going on with them. I start to help Muhammad Ali up, and he's looking at Joe Frazier, and he said, "You son of a gun can really punch." And Joe Frazier looks at Ali, and he said, "That's the way it's going to be the night of the fight. You're going down."
Indeed, Ali lost the so-called fight of the century marquee matchup in 15 rounds. It was the first defeat of his professional career. Undaunted, he then fought boxing great Ken Norton. Norton broke Ali's jaw, handing the erstwhile greatest a second stinging defeat. Jeffrey Sammons of New York University.
And many people thought that that might be the end of Ali's career. And that's also the allure of Ali, that he's able to come back from the brink, from adversity. And he would beat Ken Norton in a rematch. And Joe Frazier would not give Ali a shot at the championship. And Joe Frazier loses his crown to George Foreman, who was enormous and hulking and just destroyed Joe Frazier in two bouts.
George Foreman, now the heavyweight champion himself, did accept Ali's challenge. Ali was heavily favored to lose. The boxing world readied itself for a colossal contest between the two men. It was set for Kinshasa in the former Zaire, now called the Democratic Republic of Congo. Ali called the contest the Rumble in the Jungle.
I think it was speaking to the historic role that Ali had played in terms of black nationalism, black pride.
Almost from the beginning, the African public favored Muhammad Ali over George Foreman. Sammons explains part of the cause.
George Foreman made the serious mistake of taking a German police dog with him to Zaire. And this dog symbolized oppression and white colonialism. So George Foreman became persona non grata. And there was this famous French chant by kids and others, "Ali Bumbaye, Ali kill him."
In private, Ali lacked confidence. He spontaneously came to call on his friend, the photographer George Kalinske, at his office.
And I said, "What's going on?" He said, "Well, I'm fighting George Foreman in Zaire. He's too big, he's too strong, he's too fast, he's too young, he's too quick, he's too big. There's no way I can beat him in this fight."
Kalinske says he thought about it for a moment, then came up with a strategy that would become an Ali hallmark.
I said, "You know, Muhammad, all your life you've been training for this fight, but you didn't know it. Whenever I saw you working out, which are many, many times working out in a gym with your sparring partner, what you do is you lean against the ropes and you let your sparring partner hit you and hit you and hit you. What you do the night of the fight is the same thing. You lean against the ropes, just let them swing away, and you act like a dope on the ropes, like you're sick, like you're not well. And eventually he's going to tire himself out. Then you knock him out." He said, "You mean you want me to be a rope-a-dope?" I said, "Okay, we'll call it rope-a-dope." And that's what happened when he fought George Foreman.
The fight took place in a football stadium under the moon. It was a brutal contest, but Ali sent Foreman to the floor in the eighth round and reclaimed his heavyweight title. As ecstatic fans streamed to the ring, the commentator, David Frost, crowed, "The great man has done it. This is the most joyous scene in the history of boxing." But there were more challenges to come. Most famously, there would be Ali's epic rematch against Joe Frazier in October 75 in Manila, the Philippines. During the build-up to what became known as the Thriller in Manila, the animosity between the two men was electric.
A sharp poem, it says it'll be a killer and a thriller and a killer when I get the gorilla in Manila.
From the first bell, the men went at each other with unstoppable, constant, vicious energy. Ali finally won in the 15th round, but Jeffrey Sammons says both men paid a terrible price.
And Ali said about it that it was the closest thing to death that he had ever experienced or could imagine. And of course, we know that Ali had Parkinson's syndrome, which many believe was brought on by the brain trauma that he suffered.
For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm VOA's Adam Phillips in New York.
The Sunny Side of Sports welcomes your comments. You can send me email at sonny@voanews.com. Sonny is spelled S-O-N-N-Y. And pick up a pen or a pencil and a piece of paper. My full postal mailing address is The Sunny Side of Sports, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Room 1613, Washington, D.C., 20237. I encourage our VOA listeners to check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. The address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny. You'll see photos and videos, and you can post your comments. So check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page.
Voice of America.
Our Voice of America listeners can also follow me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @VOASunnySports. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sunny. Good to be here with you.
What is trending on this Thursday?
So a few weeks back, maybe a month or so, we talked about some of the partnerships that Twitter was going to be doing with some live sports, and a new one that they signed with the PGA Tour that they were going to be broadcasting a number of golf events live. Well, they've started to do that now with the first round of the Honda Classic kicking off today. As I logged into Twitter this morning, and actually even before I logged in, I just went to twitter.com, and there it was right on the Twitter homepage, live coverage of the Honda Classic, live video feed of the tournament going on. So we're starting to see this now being implemented with this golf tournament, and we're going to see that continue through the springtime as we have more golf tournaments come up, the Masters to come up in a couple of months. But this isn't without problems. I've noticed quite a few people saying that the feed wasn't working for them. They weren't able to get it on their phone, for instance. But never fail, a lot of people saying that they're following along with people who are live tweeting. So even if you may not be able to get the live video, there's still Twitter, still live tweeting, still serving its purpose. People are able to follow along with the latest from that tournament. But as we've talked about many times on the show, a new way for people to watch sports in the digital world in which we live.
Andrew, earlier we heard a report from Adam Phillips on the great Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier fights. I understand another possible boxing rivalry is brewing on social media.
Yeah, and talk about the new way we consume sports in the digital age. We'd also talked about the story of Manny Pacquiao putting out a poll on Twitter saying, who should I fight in the United Arab Emirates, and putting a few different names. And we mentioned that Amir Khan was the top vote getter in that Twitter poll, getting 48% of the vote. Well, now Manny Pacquiao and Amir Khan are talking about making this fight actually happen. Manny Pacquiao tweeting out earlier today, said, my team and I are in negotiations with Amir Khan for our next fight. Further announcement coming soon. #TeamPacquiao. Amir Khan responding, saying, #, Pacquiao Khan. So he's already created he's merged their two names together and already created the hashtag for this. So he says, #Pacquiao Khan, what do you think? Currently negotiating with Manny, coming soon. Watch this space. So it started with this vote on Twitter. That's how they started to tease this fight. Now the two of them are kind of being a little coy about it, tweeting back and forth saying, we're negotiating, our teams are working on putting it together. And then the great Lennox Lewis jumps in out of left field. Lennox Lewis tweets out, he says, I hear that Manny Pacquiao might be fighting Amir Khan next. Who would win that fight? #PacquiaoKhan. And he puts a poll up of his own where he asks his followers who would win that fight. Hasn't got quite the response yet that Manny Pacquiao got on his poll, but it's early yet. So we'll see. We'll monitor that and see who responds to Lennox Lewis's poll and who gets the top votes in that poll between those two.
Andrew, I couldn't help but notice in Amir Khan's tweet, he said #PacquiaoKhan. He didn't say #ConPacquiao, which kind of indicates to me that Manny is the guy driving these negotiations.
I think so. He's definitely gets top billing, I think, among those two. He's definitely the big name. But then again, he was the one who put out the poll on Twitter. So maybe that's why he gets all the credit for making that happen.
And I think Khan will have a big following should this fight happen, both from British boxing fans as well as those in South Asia. He's got links to South Asia in his family. So interesting fight should it come off.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to that point, I think it is going to help him grow a presence on social media and grow his fan base. It kind of, we see this progression where sometimes these tweets happen or the kind of trash talking starts on social media and it hypes everything up. It builds up these athletes. So he's already, a well-followed athlete, a well-known athlete. But I think just even this talk about negotiations and the speculation on social media is going to boost his profile and definitely create a lot of excitement for this fight if it does indeed happen.
And one note, the odd man out in this possible fight between Manny Pacquiao and Amir Khan appears to be the Australian Jeff Horn. Many of our VOA listeners might be wondering, who is Jeff Horn? Well, apparently a lot of people wondered that because in that poll that you mentioned, Andrew, he finished dead last. I think
7%. 7%, yeah. So
people wondering, I guess Pacquiao realized maybe I should get a more high-profile fighter.
Yeah, but even, the fact that those people were asking who is James Horn, that boosts his profile a little bit. So even though he did come in dead last, it does even help him.
What else is trending out there, Andrew?
Well, there's a new video that Nike has released, what they call an online or digital commercial. It's actually Nike Women in Sports. And this new ad has gone viral. It's showing Arab women, some of whom are in hijabs, other in more Western clothes, running, boxing, fencing, ice skating. There's even a woman who's skateboarding. And the idea of this is to kind of break down stereotypes about women in the Arab world and competing in athletics. This ad, since it's been released, has gotten more than 75,000 shares on Twitter, almost 500,000 views on YouTube, and it's created a lot of conversation on social media. There are a number of people that are saying it's inspiring. It's calling out some of the challenges that women faced in the Arab world as they try to compete in athletics or to exercise or to engage in physical activity. A lot of other people, though, are saying it's an inaccurate representation. They're saying that they're able to go out and do these things, and it's not really representing who they are. So it has created some controversy and some conversation, but there's no denying this ad. It's if our listeners go online, they find it. It really is a great ad to see these women out there engaging in these sports and breaking down some of these stereotypes and barriers.
Speaking of breaking barriers, Andrew, I mentioned on yesterday's show how Lionel Messi was recently in Egypt to promote a hepatitis C initiative. And that photo of him in front of the Great Pyramid of Giza seems to be trending still on Facebook anyways. But I got some nice comments about Messi from some of our VOA listeners. Eze Silas says, great guy, referring to Messi. I had another Facebook friend, Gatiek Kualchani, talking about Messi, says, a footballer by profession, will he manage to eradicate hepatitis C? Well, I think it's a good start that, you have somebody of Messi's stature taking on this health battle in Egypt.
Yeah, we see this time and time again with athletes who, not only, as Pacquiao and Khan are using social media to kind of promote their fight, we see them promoting a lot of causes as well. So this is a great way for him to do that.
Anything else trending out there, Andrew?
Yeah, very quickly, as we approach March, that means we are approaching March Madness and NCAA college basketball. And we're already seeing some great social media surrounding that. Last night, Syracuse upset Duke in Syracuse, and we saw a lot of social media video of the fans in the stands cheering at the buzzer beater three that won Syracuse the game. And my favorite, the video from when they rushed the court to celebrate. So it's like you're right there with them. It was a very cool video across social media.
Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
And that wraps up the February 23rd edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Rob McLean. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. to spur the development of innovative technologies to reduce food loss and waste in Africa, the Inter-Region Economic Network, or IREN, is conducting the inaugural East Africa Post-Harvest Technologies Competition 2017 through a grant from the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID's, East Africa Trade and Investment Hub. The call for applications is now open. Reducing food loss and waste is essential for improved nutrition and food security. The Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations estimates that one-third, 1.3 billion metric tons, of the food produced for human consumption is lost or wasted along global supply chains. This accounts for a 15% income reduction for over 470 million participants in the agricultural value chain, including smallholder farmers, manufacturers, and retailers. The competition calls on innovators from across the East African community to pitch technologies that address challenges in the post-harvest management of food crop commodities and enhanced labor production. The competition will offer the top 25 participants an opportunity to showcase and pitch their ideas to potential partners, including development partners, donors, governments, farmer and trader associations, and investors. The competition will take place in May 2017 during a special session of the upcoming East Africa Post-Harvest Technologies Fair. The top three contestants will split a seed fund of $30,000 through a generous contribution of agribusiness corporation Syngenta and other partners. Innovators, researchers, and individuals age 18 and above from the East African member countries, Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, Rwanda, and Burundi, are welcome to apply. Application forms, competition guidelines, and awards information are available on the competition website, www.younginnovatorsinagribusiness.com, or email profiles to yiac@irenkenya.com. Finding innovative solutions to complex development challenges is paramount to USAID's mission, said USAID Mission Director for Kenya and East Africa, Karen Freeman. The East Africa Post-Harvest Technologies Competition 2017 supports locally driven solutions for greater East African food security. We are proud to be the sponsors of this competition.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Tuesday on Health Chat. February is Heart Health Month in the United States. Host Lenore Moudou will end the month with a look at children and heart disease. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC. Right here on VOA Africa.